You are listening to the Fortune Geek Heroes podcast. Look at you. Hello and welcome to the Fortune Geek Heroes podcast. It is episode 4 and we're interviewing American McGee. I'm saying that right, aren't I?
How's it going, guys? Hello?
I always get so scared saying people's names. And you're currently trying to do a Kickstarter for Akinero, a video game about demons.
That is correct, yeah. Glad to be here talking with you guys about that today.
Excellent. That's 2 points for me, saying two things correctly. So, I'm Carl Smith, obviously the one hosting this, and I'm joined by Tom Blair as well.
Hello.
Awesome. So let's just jump into it. I was actually looking at something online the other day, and I think you've seen this too, Tom, where a guy hired an online assassin to kill his son in all his video games online.
Yeah.
Did you read about that?
I remember seeing a story for it. I never read the story. Even the title seemed a bit far-fetched. Some people do take things a step too far.
They really do.
Addiction goes to a whole great many levels.
I mean, do you think that's a new extreme? Do you think it would not be easy just to switch off his computer?
Well, apparently that's become a bit of a challenge.
Goddamn. So I wonder how he goes about doing that then. So like, he puts an ad up online or something?
Where is the line? An ad anybody could pick up. You know, if you spend enough time in-game, you may as well be a professional hitman.
Like Craigslist, isn't it? Goes on Craigslist. Hey, I need someone to kill my son. I know, I meant online. Not in real life. So, damn, I wanted to kill people.
I suppose you could put it up for the job centre.
Job centre. All those people. But yeah, I thought it was pretty twisted. I've got the headline here, actually. Chinese father hires virtual hitman to kill son in online game, so he will get a job.
So this was a hit on his virtual character, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It was, he basically hired a guy to play up his own characters on the game, and then take out the son. Yeah. And just keep killing him until he quit.
Online gaming is such a big deal here, you know. A lot of these smaller cities, or I should say second and third tier cities, not the major cities, that's kind of all there is for people to do. They work, and then they go home, or they go to the internet cafes and they play, because outside kind of sucks, and so they would rather be inside a virtual world.
I can understand that. It's just as bad here.
So you literally go around, like, the streets are empty. So where is everyone? Like, they're all upstairs gaming.
Well, there's gaming cafes, sort of gaming centers where you walk in and there'll be hundreds of PCs lined up on tables with headphones and comfy chairs and people serving drinks and snacks. And so they, go in there after school or after work and just spend hours and spend the night in there as well. They have a sort of midnight pass for boys, for men who go in there and have plans to spend the night there, and so that comes with a towel.
Can imagine.
That'd be something interesting to have here.
Well, we got nothing like that here. Something's going on with your audio. Your audio's kind of snapped.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, there we go. It's back.
No, something like that here would be cool here. Especially in places like this, where it's the middle of nowhere, and there's absolutely nothing to do.
I get the feeling we get a lot lazier gamers, so it's basically, hey guys, you want to go to the gaming cafe?
Nah.
I don't feel like it. I just want to stay in and game. We don't go outside.
Well, I think in a place like, the UK, so many people have access to purchasing their own computers or their own consoles. But you got to remember that here in China, not a lot of people can afford to buy their own computer. And so that's why they end up going to these social, cafes. And I think another part of it is that they do quite enjoy together and social activities, maybe more so than a lot of other cultures.
So what do you do then? Do you go in and then pay for it and then get a meal as well? Or
yeah, you just walk in and there's a guy behind a cashier counter and you go in and you get online. And because all of the games here are online, you're playing either a client that's already been installed or you're playing in a web browser. And So it's not, I mean, that's the other thing, that the type of distribution of gaming also creates an environment where that kind of business can be very successful because everything is online.
Imagine it's a prime place to set up a gaming business as well.
You mean to make games?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's actually a very strange place to be an independent developer of Western games. We're one of the few, and but the gaming industry here is absolutely massive. But it's all directed towards production of content for internal consumers, and it's absolutely the biggest gaming industry in the world by number of people employed, by number of customers, and by amount of revenue they generate.
Oh wow! Well, yeah, China's would be a big place to do, wouldn't it?
What?
A lot of people, and especially if they're holding up like gaming cafes and stuff.
So, like a company, Tencent, they last I read, they have about 600 million people inside of their online network. Talking about double or more the population of the United States signing up to one company to play their games and use their products.
Oh snap!
It's a lot of people. About half the population of China.
It's a massive number. So as you can imagine, that's one of the most successful. That is the most successful video game company in the world. But of course, a lot of people in the West have never heard of it.
Yeah, different tastes, different borders.
It's quite different.
Hmm. Have you played any video games lately, Tom?
Played a fair few. Still been quite hooked on the Old Republic.
Old Republic. Oh yeah, it's free to play now, Old Republic, isn't it?
It is. Played a bit of Darksiders. The game's a very simple hack and slash.
Darksiders is the one where you're
war.
War, yeah, that's it. Yeah. You're one of the four horsemen, and you have to go causing shit.
Yeah.
I like that game.
It's very simple though. It is. Just hit the button to hit things, and that's the entire game.
You know, I've still got so many games on my backlist. I've bought games, and they're still not the wrapping. I have not got around to play them. I'm always so busy.
I don't know. I buy them on Steam, and they're just sat there waiting to be downloaded.
Yeah.
Or I download them, they're just sat there waiting to be earlier installed, just waiting to be played, and never got around to it.
Pretty crazy.
What's the worst? UK works some of the worst hours in the world. Longest as well.
Sucks. Yeah. Oh, did I tell you about the thing I discovered the other day? I discovered the greatest Twitter on Earth. That's probably an understatement, actually. It's probably better. It's called Coffee Dad. If anyone's interested in checking it out, it's @coffee_dad. And the tagline is just that Daddy loves coffee. And he tweets stuff like, just made coffee, get this from this. Brewing some coffee. A cup of coffee. Holding a coffee. Putting on coffee.
That's a man with a coffee thing.
Pouring a little coffee. But his Twitter's really messed up because you go through it and then you find posts like, visiting my son's grave, how could I let this happen? Don't know why that really got me. I'm following it on Twitter. you literally just post coffee updates. Having myself a little coffee.
Wow. I start posting every time I have a relentless. See how long it takes me to trend.
It's weird how these things can trend though, because that's really popular Twitter. It's like 20,000 followers. It's like he just puts literally coffee updates. It's weird. But you get some of those. You get fake ones, don't you, for fictional characters, Twitter accounts.
Yeah. Facebook too.
What's that Twitter? I saw Twitter a while ago, and it's just a guy, and I don't think he knew how to use Twitter. I think he saw it as like a dating service. And he was like posting stuff like, you will give me date, or I will go on date with you, or any chicks here. So I don't think he's using that correctly. Someone should tell him. But loads of people followed him just because he didn't know how to use Twitter.
I prefer these pictures you see people posting of they punch something into a post on Facebook, but they thought it was a search bar. So they'll put up something like unusual vaginal smell.
Where to get ingredients for chicken casserole.
Yeah, exactly. Or they're searching for girls, you know, pictures of naked girls, and it's someone's dad. And so then they updating their status with, you know, wanting to find nude girls. So, yeah.
That'd be awkward.
It is. It's quite funny, though. It's true. Some of the responses. Especially the response to parents doing it. Great.
Oh, yeah. Parents, how do I use this? Is this like Facebook? I see a couple of those posts, actually, quite a bit.
Well, you also see a lot of, Dad, why are you looking for porn on Facebook?
Why are you looking for porn on Facebook, Dad?
Well, here we have this thing called Weixin that is kind of Twitter combined with Facebook, and it's on your phone. And this is also run by that company, Tencent. And guys do use it to find girls and vice versa, because one of the features it has is a look around, so you can see who's near you geographically and how far away they are. So there was one funny story circulating about a dad who had done a look around, had found a cute looking girl and started messaging her, only to find out that it was his own daughter. nearby, and yeah.
How did he not know? Did he not have a picture of her? Was it just?
I guess it wasn't showing her face clearly enough or something, so he, you know, he just didn't.
Dog face, it confuses everybody.
Yeah.
So he goes, he's like, oh yeah, I'm totally hitting some of that, and he travels to this place. It's like, yeah, it's only like a 5-minute walk away. He's like, that's my daughter.
He's messaging her, you know, and so she finally writes back because she knows it's her dad. She writes back, dad, me, you know, stop sending me, you know, these flirtatious messages.
God damn, that would be so awkward.
So awkward.
But I'm not going home for a while.
I hate the conversation. Well, yeah, I guess it comes up along the lines of people sending texts to the wrong people as well.
Yeah, those are all fun too.
I see a lot of those, that's great.
These one of those. One I've read of those is a quick story. And it's a guy sent a message to this one guy, and he said, how's the new house? And the guy's like, I'm gonna play along with this. He has no idea who this guy is, or where he is, etc, etc. And he says, oh wait, I've got it here, actually. He basically says, what's he say? One sec. Trying to get it up. I've got like a mountain of like pictures and stuff on my iPod that I just sift through. It's in the mountain of just like pure crap. I'm just trying to find it. Oh, I'll do it off memory. Mm-hmm. It basically says, yeah, the house is going good. I'm looking for people to come over. And he's like, oh, cool. I thought you didn't want to have any parties. And he's like, nah, I definitely want to have some parties. So the guy replies, cool. So how many people should I bring? Just bring as many people as you can. Well, I can get about 50 people on call. He's like, that's perfect. And then this guy obviously goes to this house with 50 people behind him. I like to imagine. And then the next text is, who the fuck is this?
You got me in some serious trouble, Dave.
Got me into some serious trouble, dude. Show up to a house with 50 people. The guy's like, what are you doing?
I said no parties. Smart.
This is actually pretty crazy.
I like seeing some of the ones about people who accidentally admit cheating to children because they've got names similar to their mothers or to the name of the mistress.
Oh, that's not good.
It was quite funny with the amount of extortion children tried to get back. Our next box new TV, $200, and I'll never say a word.
I see on the news and stuff, it's getting more and more often now. It's much more frequent, these things. And it's kids that have parties that invite people on Facebook, and then like 10,000 people show up and just destroy their neighbourhood.
Yeah. There was a good one a couple of years ago, I don't know, MySpace, about some guys who stole the roof of the house when 50,000 people showed up to this party.
done a MySpace.
Yeah.
How long ago was this? Like 10 years?
Something stupid like that.
Is MySpace still running?
Yes.
There's not like really any point.
It's still running, but it's a gaming platform now. It's like gaming and music and I think it was Justin Timberlake and his investment company that bought it.
It's got like 10 million members.
I imagine Justin Timberlake would see the profit in MySpace.
It's got like 10 million members.
I can't believe it. I might quickly load it up and have a look.
It's mostly US now, though.
Oh, I can imagine. MySpace.
You know that Friendster that used to be around, that relaunched here in Asia, and it is a pure gaming site now. It's and it targets like Philippines and Thailand, Malaysia.
Oh, cool! I remember Friendster. That's really old, that one.
Yeah. So somebody bought that name and then relaunched it as an online gaming platform.
It's mad. It's becoming quite common. Most people are not connecting to generic social sites; they're connecting to gaming social sites.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a big movement right now of people moving to so-called boutique social sites and ones that are targeted. It's like Pinterest, you know, being about arts and crafts and photography. And then you get sites that are targeting video games or other hobbies.
In the last few years, it's picked up because it's more common use to things like Steam.
Yeah, Steam.
Or on Live.
I think Steam was really successful, and because people saw that, were like, why aren't we doing stuff like this? Because that was the first major digital platform, wasn't it,
for games?
But I think that there's also a feeling amongst people that a site like Facebook is too busy with other things going on, or maybe can't be trusted with certain personal details. So that's why I think people are demanding sites that are more specific to their interests instead of something as general as Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook is pretty vague. Anyone can log into Facebook. I guess that's the beauty of it, really.
Facebook's getting to quite a few extremes now. I was reading an article this morning saying that they're installing a new feature where you can pay $100 to contact Mike Zuckerberg directly.
Oh yeah, you pay for features now. You can actually pay to have your post at the top of a news feed or something.
That's it.
So as soon as I have to start paying for stuff like that, maybe it's time to not use this anymore.
That's it. That just leaves the world on Twitter.
See, I love Twitter because Twitter's like you can really go for all the shit posts, can't you, on Twitter? Because it's just like 140 characters.
That's it.
You have to be witty and pretty snappy in like a short space. It's not like you don't get these long posts and stuff.
We just don't get bombarded with massive links either.
It's true.
Everything's got to be everything's bit L-wide or tiny URL'd.
I love the idea that anyone can follow anyone. But in order to talk to someone, you have to follow them back. So now I don't really want to talk to you. I'll talk to you, though. Who's not following me? Oh, yeah. I think social media is really playing a big part in how things get out there nowadays.
And we're finding that it's very helpful in the way that we're running our business because we can do all of our marketing and reach all of our customers on our own now. Whereas that used to be purely the domain of a publisher.
I see where you're coming from with that. A lot of other companies have been quite a fan of it too. Recently, Guild Wars 2 used it a lot when they first opened the servers, and it helped come through all the problems they were having instead of having to go through ridiculous amounts of emails saying, yeah, it's broken.
It's true. It makes things a lot easier because it's already a place where everyone is.
That's it. They kept hundreds of thousands of people updated all in one go, and they could sift through the sponsors.
We did the same thing for Diablo 3 when the servers weren't very good at loading stuff when it first started.
What do you mean when? It's still not. Still get massive waiting queues for Diablo 3.
Really?
Yeah. The game bombed hard, but you still get massive waiting queues trying to log on.
So I went into the debate of Diablo 3. I thought it was alright. See, I've only played Diablo 1. I haven't played Diablo 2.
I've played Diablo 1 and 2. It's been a fair few years.
Have you guys tried the Akaneiro beta yet?
Yeah, we have. We were playing that last night, weren't we, Tom?
We've had quite a few people comparing it pretty closely to the Diablo games. And I've read more than a few comments of people saying they now prefer this to Diablo 3, which is awesome.
Yeah, totally.
Can't complain at that.
It could beat Diablo 3 at its own game.
Yeah,
well, that's a real kick to Blizzard.
I mean, I never thought we would read a comment like that about something, you know, that we were building, that we set out to build, you know, purposely simple. And so it's a very nice thing to hear coming from the people playing it.
Well, the thing is, everything's going a bit too overcomplicated now. If you go into World of Warcraft, you've got like 12 skill bars. You've got no screen space or anything.
Yeah.
That excludes all your add-ons.
The thing I love about World of Warcraft is people get the game, they play it, they become hardcore, and they're like, right, okay, now what's not in the game? I know, let's get like shitloads of toolbars and add-ons and stuff that help you play. So is that a game anymore? Or is it just...
an obsession.
An obsession.
Well, it gets mad. They got your customizable UIs.
Customizable UIs. You could get Bejeweled as well.
Yeah.
That's always struck me as weird. It's like it's a game within the game. But it's not like just a quick game. You can actually play that game for hours inside your own game. So why not just get Bejeweled?
Means you don't have to minimise the game while someone does a soul run.
That's true. See, look, because Bejeweled, they put it in purely so you can play it whilst you're waiting for stuff. So while you're waiting for your game to commence, you're playing a game inside the game while you're waiting for your game. It's weird. That's like three levels right there. It's crazy.
But it was effective nonetheless.
So let's talk a bit about your game studio, Spicy Horse.
Sure. What would you guys like to know?
Well, first of all, Alice Madness Returns, that's a big AAA game that you guys published, right?
Yeah, well, not published, but we developed it, yeah.
Oh, yeah, developed, sorry, yeah, developed. I know there's a big difference in all these buzzwords.
A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the biggest project that we've taken on, and it was the first time that an indie studio here had made a AAA game for consoles, you know, from beginning to end. So it was actually one of the bigger independent developments that ever happened out here as well.
Oh, nice.
We had a good time making it. We got up to like 75 people internally and another 65 people externally doing art. And
that was a lot of people for art. That's a hell of an art force.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, half the budget oftentimes or more goes to art when you're building a big console title like that. And I think a lot of people don't realize that when they're playing Call of Duty or Medal of Honor or Mirror's Edge or any of these big games on console, that a lot of times the assets that they're playing around, you know, the worlds they're inside of, that's all made in China. And, you know, so every one of the big publishers, Western publishers, uses and has outsourcing here in China for art for their games.
Well, because it's brilliant art, I imagine. Get a lot of artists in China. Well, I've heard anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing that made me think that I wanted to move here, because I came up and I'd been living in Hong Kong. And I was actually helping a friend to start an outsourcing company doing art. And I saw that was really all there was. You either, if you were a Chinese game developer, you either worked for an outsourcer or you worked for one of the very big local operators, like the publishers, you know. But there's no independent development. And so I thought if we opened up a studio here and worked on interesting titles, that we'd be able to attract people who didn't want to be, you know, just doing outsource, who wanted to have more creative control. And so that was the thing that inspired me to come here and start up.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, you don't really hear a lot of games that come from China.
Well, you don't hear about it, but that's the thing. I guarantee you that every game you're playing, if you're playing a console game, if it's from Activision, they have a giant outsource company here. EA, massive outsourcing here. THQ, massive outsourcing. Ubisoft, outsourcing. I mean, they all have multi-100-person outsourcing studios here in China. But you'll never hear that when you're playing Assassin's Creed, that the assets are made in China. They just don't advertise it.
I guess it's something need to know, isn't it?
Nah, I don't think it's that. I think it's just the ends to a mean, really. Well, means to an end.
That's it, but it's not one of those things they'd ever tell you unless you really needed to know it. But if you're buying the game just to play a story, you never really need to know it.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, when I go online, sometimes I talk about the fact that we're here. I get, you'll read, on one of the gaming news sites, the gamers there getting very angry and saying, you know, you outsourced stuff to China and you suck. And I'm reading this and I'm thinking, you know, the keyboard you're typing on, the computer you're looking at, the clothes you're wearing, the games you're playing, everything in front of us is being made
in China.
And so the idea that someone might, you know, be upset that I'm here, I think it's pretty silly.
It does seem pretty silly. At the end of the day, you get the game. That's good. I mean, you want the game to be as best as it can be,
really. Yeah, but a lot of people are quite, what's that, xenophobic? They're really picky about where they get their stuff from. People like to know the stuff are made in the country they come from.
I think
so. I don't mind.
But, you know, I think the majority of people just don't realize, like, I mean, do you own Apple products? Well, those are all manufactured in China, you know. Do you buy clothes from The Gap or from H&M? That's all made in China. You know, all of this stuff that we consume is coming from China. So I think it's very difficult for a person to take a stand against purchasing something that's not made here or made outside of their own country, because you just, in today's world, you simply can't get away from it.
No, it's true. I completely agree with that.
Apple, on the hand, are taking their own stance on that. They're building their own factory for building their iPhones in America. Because it fell out with the Chinese manufacturer.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
I didn't read about this.
There's a big lawsuit behind it. But that's Apple's thing at the minute. You know, you don't hear anything else. It's lawsuit this, lawsuit that. Dodgy TV this. Same iPhone that.
They're lost. Without jobs, I like. We don't know. Just assume everyone. Okay. It's probably what you wanted,
well,
right?
He was doing that in the first place.
Yeah, totally. We actually put some time in creating stuff as well.
Yeah.
New innovations in technology.
Which hasn't... Which nothing has come since he died. Except a smaller iPad.
That's what I like. Sorry.
Question, how long will this interview last?
Or this... it's just an hour, so it'll finish at 10. Now,
I see.
We're all getting...
to go out,
sorry?
But obviously can't do that in the middle of the talk.
Anyway, we will get to Kickstarter quite shortly.
No worries. I'm just worried about the dog, that's all.
Okay.
It's fine. It's understandable.
Okay, let's get into the Kickstarter then. What's up next? So, you're trying to raise $200,000 for this Kickstarter, aren't you?
Yeah. It's kind of a weird way of going about it, I think, and there's been some news about that we have a finished game. Actually, you guys played it. But we thought we'd use Kickstarter to help launch the game instead of using Kickstarter to help start production on the game.
Okay, so that's a different take on things. So what will the money go on then?
Well, so because it's an online game and, you know, we're going to be making improvements and we're going to be maintaining it into the foreseeable future, this money would go to help us to do those improvements and bring those features into the game faster. Because it would enable us to keep more people working on the project instead of having them move to new projects. So that's one part of it. But the other part of it is it's a way that players can sort of imagine it like a pre-auction. So they can go in and purchase via the Kickstarter things that they're going to eventually use in the game, like weapons or pets or clothing and things like that.
That makes sense.
Okay, yeah, that does make sense.
Let's see where else go.
So we got that part of the idea from things that happened here in China with the online RPGs, where they'll have a real-world auction to sell off virtual items in a game that has not yet been launched. And there's some really funny or interesting stories about people spending, you know, 20,000 U.S. to purchase a one-of-a-kind virtual sword to be used in one of these soon-to-be-released games. So it's got some precedence.
$20,000, jeez.
Yeah, $20,000. Well, they, you know, but they're buying something that they know is one of a kind, and in fact, they can buy that as a sort of investment, because there's a chance that they purchase it for $20,000, And then after the game launches, if the game is very popular, it may actually increase in value. So here you have people who so heavily invested in their virtual characters and their virtual lives that they take out insurance on the stuff that they own in there, and they protect their accounts more than they would, say, protect their own bank account. And a lot of people have more value wrapped up in their virtual lives than they do in their real lives.
To be fair, though, if I was paying $20,000 for a sword, a virtual sword, I would insure the hell out of that.
Sorry, if you bought a virtual sword and tried to insure it in England, you'd get locked away for crazy?
No, you wouldn't. You can do it in England.
Can you?
Yeah, loads of people have done it.
Bloody hell.
Because it is worth a few, if people are willing to buy it, then it's obviously worth something. That's the whole point. So what kind of features are you planning to implement in like the next...
So the stuff that we're talking about in the Kickstarter is like co-op and multiplayer is one thing that we want to get in there. We're also looking at bringing the title to tablet, so for Android and iOS tablets, so that you'd be able to play. Right now you can play on a PC or a Mac, and either in your web browser or via a client, but we want to add, you know, the option to play on a tablet as well.
Okay. I did notice that you have some multiplayer features already in there, like the chat box, for instance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the framework for a lot of that stuff is already done. In fact, the framework for playing co-op, you can see the early kind of pieces of that in the Summon Ally feature. So what needs to be done now is sort of hooking up the background, you know, the back background code to make that into actual multiplayer with another person. So it's not necessarily that these are difficult tasks. In fact, a lot of them are pretty straightforward. It's just a question of how we use our resources in our studio. And being that we're actually a pretty small studio and we're self-funded, we have a tough time keeping too many people on one project for too long. We've got to get them working on the next thing. You know?
Of course, yeah, because it's a small studio. So what does it take to create a multiplayer game then? What else could you need?
Well, it's just a matter of who else do we need. It's programmers, primarily. Our network engineers, they need to spend some time on connecting this together. Our UI guys have to put in the functionality. You know, artists have to add some additional pieces. So it's just, you know, another part of the existing team that needs to spend time to put all that stuff together.
Okay. Noticed it's actually pretty popular online, isn't it, the beta? A lot of people are playing it.
Yeah, it has been really well received. People, you know, seem to be very happy about it. I stay in there and either kind of visibly chat and talk with the players or sometimes lurk and just watch what they're saying. But everything that we've seen so far has been hugely positive. And like I said before, there's been even comparisons to some larger games like Diablo, which of course is very flattering, makes us very happy to hear that.
I understand that. What's your plans for the expanding storyline?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another part of the what's on offer in the Kickstarter is helping to accelerate the development of those content packs. But yeah, we've got plans that go forward. Right now, there's another 3 or 4 content packs already laid out and talked about and that are in that Kickstarter. And so our hope is that, you know, for the foreseeable future, we'll just continue to build new updates and put in new content for people to play with and hopefully release stuff, you know, every month or two. We can actually develop quite quickly, so it means that you should be able to see expansion packs coming out every 2 months or so.
Oh, well, that'll be uncommon, though. That'll be pretty fast-paced.
So what is the... story for this so far? I mean, the basic story. I mean, obviously you can't go into details.
Sure. Well, the inspiration is obviously, a little bit of Red Riding Hood, then combined with this concept of this order of Akane that hunts wolves and demons, specifically trying to keep back the forces of evil, you know, and hell from invading Earth. So this game takes place at a point where these demons are once again trying to break into the real world, and so the Akane fighters are going to this island in Japan and trying to beat them back and keep them at bay.
Yeah, because I noticed the design is based off a lot of Japanese art.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I read this book called The Lost Wolves of Japan that gave me the initial inspiration. And that's a historical book talking about the the genocide, basically, the destruction of all of the indigenous wolves in Japan about 100 years ago. And so that kind of gave me the idea to set a game in that period, because it was a very interesting period in time where they still had warlords running around and ninja, like real life ninjas and samurais. And then they also had Western influence of guns and other types of more modern weapons coming in as the cattlemen came in. So you had a kind of old West in Japan going on. And so that was it seemed to me a really great place to set a story like this.
Yeah, it does sound like a very interesting developed story.
Well, I haven't seen too many games based in the time.
Yeah, definitely unique. I mean, when we think about doing a game, a lot of times we do want to make sure that it's going to feel like it's not been done before. So this was something that kind of fit together really nicely and also supports, you know, the idea of building a game around it very well. There's just so much history there for us to work with in terms of the clothing, the weapons, the types of monsters, all of this stuff. I mean, there's just a huge to work with.
Cool. And you want to stop it being repetitive as well, I imagine.
Yeah, I don't think that we're going to sort of run out of monsters and places to explore for a very long time.
Cool.
How did it feel stepping from a big AAA title to doing an independent game of your own?
Well, it feels good. I mean, we actually have three titles that we've launched now under this new strategy to do free-to-play and online mobile games. And so coming off of Alice, that was great. I mean, it was a huge project, but it was a lot of fun and very satisfying to get something like that done. But, you know, being able to work without the kind of pressures that a publisher will put on you, that's very nice. It's very liberating to, you know, be able to follow our own sort of
pace.
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. So how long has this been in development currently then? Obviously it's practically out of development now, isn't it?
Finished. Yeah. Well, so we finished up the Alice project at the beginning of 2011, and that's also when we made the transition to this new type of development. So Akinero is one of the first projects that we started in the design phase then. So it's been in production for about 2 years now. I think in total it's probably about 18 months.
You've got a lot of ground to be a beta within 18 months.
Well, the guys are pretty fast. And also, you know, keep in mind that the team was building two other games at the same time. So we launched first a game called Big Head Bash, and then another title called Crazy Fairies, both of those in the middle or late part of last year. And then Akinero just went into closed beta at the late part of last year as well. So, and all of that is from a team of just 50 people. And, you know, of that 50, I think about maybe five or six of them are not for production. Like, we have two cleaning ladies, right? So that's counted in 50.
Wow, that's actually quite an achievement with 50 people.
Yeah, like I said, the team is, you know, a lot of them have been there for 5 or 6 years. So everybody works together very well, works together very efficiently. And they are just very, very productive. And I think part of that is, because they're amazing people, and part of that is because of the way that we manage our productions in terms of the production process.
So what is the production process, if you can go into that?
Sure, yeah. We use something that looks a little bit like a Scrum for agile development. With sprints and breaking the game into small component pieces, and there's also a lot of I guess you could say micromanagement. We manage tasks down to very fine level of detail, and we use that to bounce people back and forth between different projects in the week. So, like, one of our animators may actually work on three different games in 1 week. Same with a lot of the artists. So that means that we're not just having to manage the production on a single game at once, but, we're having to blend together the development of the three games and manage all the people for all three. It just means that there's a lot of detail that goes into the production process.
I imagine that can get a bit hectic at times.
It does, but we, like I said, we've been doing it for a while. So the first game that we did as Spicy Horse and as a team was the Grimm game, which was a PC episodic title. And there were 23 episodes of that game. And that was when we got into this rhythm of splitting the development team up and having them work on, they would work on three different episodes at the same time, but they would do it in a sort of assembly line fashion. So group A would work on just the beginning of episodes and then pass it to group B, who would work it towards beta, and then pass it to group C, who would final it. And so we got to be very, very good at that kind of production.
I can imagine. So let's get back to the Kickstarter then. So what are you offering for prizes for these people?
So there are a range of things. Some of them virtual items that may be like the soundtrack to the game, which is available on iTunes, but we're going to give that away for free, or say a digital art book, or like I said before, assets or items in the game, so like a weapon. And we're even offering people the chance to design a weapon or to design a one of these helper pets. Or even do something like have your name attached to a bridge in the game. So whenever somebody walks over a bridge, it could say that it's the Geek Hero Bridge, right? So those are kind of some of the virtual things that we've been offering. Then we're also doing some things like signed artwork that our artists have done and we print on canvas, or inviting people to, at the higher tiers, pay to have a dinner, either here in Shanghai or in San Francisco, if they're interested in meeting the team or meeting me. And so there's a pretty broad range of stuff there for people.
So do you like that? I love it when they offer like dinners and stuff. We talked to a guy a few weeks ago. His top prize was shaving his beard and giving it to someone. Wow, that's a bit extreme.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Well, we had somebody take us up already. One person bought at the dinner in San Francisco, and we just had an inquiry today about somebody wanting to know the details of what would happen if they donated for the dinner in Shanghai. And so it seems that there's some interest in it.
That's good. I mean, the top prize is $15,000, is it?
$10,000.
$10,000, sorry.
Just on the side a bit, have you got your own in-house crew for making the game's music?
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time?
Have you got your own in-house crew for making the game soundtrack?
Like composers and stuff. Oh,
yeah,
awesome.
We do, absolutely. So those guys, well, now it's just one single guy, but it used to be that we had two people on the Alice project, and they have their own sound recording booth, and they have all the kit, you know, that goes along with... So they do all the composition of the music, they record VO, they do dialogue, and they do sound effects, all of that internal to the studio.
Oh, no way. Imagine they must work pretty hard at that, then.
I'm sure most companies outsource that one.
Yeah,
I'm aware that a lot of companies outsource it, but I personally am a really big fan of good music and good sound in games. And, you know, in my history, back in the Doom and Quake days, I actually did a lot of sound effects for those games, and I worked directly with the guys who did the music on those games. So I always felt like you got a much better experience if you had the sound people working directly on the game as opposed to trying to outsource all of it.
Yeah, so everything is done within your company, then. It's just...
Yeah.
Nothing needs to go anywhere else.
Exactly.
Something, yeah.
The only time we outsource stuff is when it's raw 3D bulk production of 3D assets. So say, like on the Alice project, what we had was, that's where the 60-plus people who worked outside of our studio, that's where they came in. But we still maintained a 3D department internally to clean up and also to do kind of hero assets during that game, even though we were using outsourcing for most of the 3D. Of course, for us, outsourcing meant it was going down the street. It was pretty funny. The guy from one of the studios that was doing that work would come by every week with a hard drive on a bicycle. So he would ride his bicycle with a hard drive full of game assets and drop them off at the studio.
Well, that's going to be a lot more.
Hey, you got your game assets here.
It's going to be a lot more convenient than having to wait for time zones.
And also the bicycle was funny because when you thought about it, the data transfer rate on a bicycle was faster the hard drive than it would be to try to send the stuff across the city on the internet. So
I'd like to imagine that guy trying, but I'm just going to go deliver it then. It'd just be a lot easier.
It'll take me 5 minutes.
I'm just down the road.
Exactly.
That's pretty wicked. Almost out of questions here. So, do you think you'll make your target?
You know, it's hard to say. There's a website that does tracking of these things, and it provides a sort of simulated funnel, like the direction you're trending towards. So right now we're trending towards not making it, though for most of the days that we've been looking at this, we've been trending towards getting there. So we're currently at 66,000, on our way to 200,000, but the trend points at 186,000, so we'll see. But if we don't make it, it's also not the end of the world, because we've already had a lot of really great things come out of it. We've had a lot of the people that obviously are interested in the game coming, learning more about the game and getting more involved in the community because of it. We've had a huge amount of marketing come out of it. And there's also been some side benefits like potential investors or publishers for different regions around the world coming in and expressing interest in it as well.
Oh, yeah, I imagine that's always an advantage.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got 1,300 odd backers, have you not?
1,376, yep.
That's a lot of people interested in the game anyway. That's a really big push, I imagine.
Well, we've had over 25,000 people play through the beta so far. And so, the interest in the title is pretty meaningful. And that's all been, without a lot of marketing, it's all been word of mouth. So it's a good sign that people are very interested in the title.
Well, it just proves how interested they are, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that, the publishers in different regions around the world, they can see that. So that's one of the reasons we're getting a lot of interest from them as well. Because, now we've got a huge number of publishers in Korea and Japan and China and places, that we'd like to have a publishing partner writing and saying that they want this for their local markets as well.
Excellent. So it's just, it's a big push for the company, even if you don't make it. It's still...
Yeah, I think it's a maybe it doesn't work this way for everybody who tries it, but certainly for us as a launch tool for this game, it's been great. And I think, I was talking to a friend last night, if I could change anything, I would probably have discounted this target price, down to 100,000, simply because I would have figured in the value of the marketing and stuff that we've got. And that would have probably convinced me that this was less about trying to hit this goal that's geared towards paying for the features, and more about just using this as a marketing tool.
Yeah, totally. Well, that's me out of questions, actually. Do you have anything else to add, Tom?
Are you asking if I have anything else to add on top?
Yeah, go for it. Do you have anything else to add on top?
No, I think that's pretty much it. The game is, like we said, it's in open beta, so people can go to Spicy World, that's our gaming portal, or they can go to Kongregate and they can play it. It's also looking like the game is going to be on Steam. We're sitting at number 3 in the selection process on Greenlight right now, so I think towards the end of this month, it's very likely that we'll see the game published there. And so, yeah, people can go and check it out. And especially if they can go to Steam and vote, give a positive vote for the game, that would be great.
Excellent. That's where I heard this before. I think I've actually already voted through on the green light.
Good. Well,
I'll explain. That gives me one answer to this.
Yeah, we're very excited to see the game on Steam. I mean, there's such a massive and dedicated audience of gamers there, it can really, you know, make or break a game or even a developer. So, you know, if we can have a successful launch there and people really like the game, that could really sort of establish our company in this new space that we've been working in. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to that.
Excellent, yeah.
Oh, when you get on there, I'll forge you through some positive PR.
That would be great. Every little bit helps.
Totally. Every vote counts. Right, okay. I actually think that's us coming to the end of it then. Unless we have any more questions?
No, I think we're clear.
Excellent. So, if you want to contribute to the Kickstarter, which I suggest you do, because it's an awesome-looking game. I've played the beta myself. It seems pretty good. Go to Kickstarter. Just search for Akinero.
A-K-A-N-E-I-R-O, Demon Hunter.
Well done, Tom. I actually haven't got it. I've got the pronunciation of it, but I don't have the actual way you write it. Yeah, is there anything else you want to plug up?
No, I think that's it. I really appreciate you guys having me join and give me some time to talk about what we're working on.
Absolutely no problem. I love having people on talking about their stuff.
It's definitely worth the early Sunday morning.
Yeah, early Sunday morning. It is quite early here, actually. It's like nearly 10 on a Sunday morning. Right, yeah, I think that's it then. So good luck with the Kickstarter. Wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Hope you make it, yeah. And that's us done.
All right, talk to you guys later.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You have just been listening to the Fortune Geek Heroes podcast. Remember, for more fun, you can always visit thefortunebooks.com for previews of our upcoming projects. And if you feel like it, follow us on Twitter, @CarlCanBlog, for me. Have a good night.